Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, July 23rd, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Oakland, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And our producer, Roger Chang, is here as well. How are you feeling, Roger?
I am feeling fine.
We have prepared our navels for a little gazing later on this show. Columbia Journalism Review take on tech media, which we think we are interested in, and we guess maybe some of you are interested in since you consume this show. And it's a good chance to just kind of step back and look at how we do things, how the world does things. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Snapchat will shut down its Snap Cash payment service on August 30th. Snap Cash was launched back in 2014 in partnership with Square.
Interesting that yet another trend bites the dust. Samsung says in September it will begin mass producing the 146-inch 4K micro LED display called The Wall that it showed off at CES. Samsung also said that next year it will launch a thinner consumer version, 30 millimeters versus The Wall's 80 millimeters. Samsung says micro LEDs last longer and suffer less from burnout than OLED.
For burn-in, particularly, the stuck pixel effect. And another CES product that's actually coming. I'm so excited. That's two within the last couple weeks. Sony announced its 8.0-millimeter IMX586 CMOS sensor for phones with the industry's highest pixel count at 48 megapixels. Sony is pretty much a sensor company. The sensor uses Sony's quad Bayer color filter array to combine pixels together for low light shooting as well. So you get an effective 12 megapixels low light or 48 megapixels high res in one sensor. Sony says the new IMX586 can record 4K video at 90 frames per second, 1080p at 240 frames per second. Hello, slow-mo guys. And the first samples of the 48 megapixel chip will arrive in September 2018.
Sources tell CNBC that Pinterest may get near $1 billion in revenue this year thanks to strong ad sale growth, particularly in mobile, and may go public by mid-2019. Pinterest raked in $500 million in sales in 2017 with particular success by those mobile ads. Pinterest has 200 million monthly active users, and I actually thought that they were public already.
Well, will the investors find that they have a high return of Pinterest? Let's not talk about that anymore. Let's talk about my hometown paper, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. What are they reporting, Sarah?
Well, Tom, I'm not sure if you're going to love or hate this story, but the St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported Friday that Uber and Lyft driver Jason Gargock had been live streaming his rides on Twitch without passengers' knowledge since March. The streaming was hot against was not against Missouri law, which both Uber and Lyft said at the outset, but was a violation of Twitch's community guidelines. Gargock said he had a sticker on his car that notified passengers that the vehicle was equipped with audio and visual recording devices, and consent was given if you enter the vehicle because you would have seen the sign. Uber removed Gargock from its service Saturday, lifted the same on Sunday.
Apologies for singing the old Salus Post-Dispatch theme song there in the background.
I was like, Tom, you're right.
Couldn't help it.
Song?
The yellow wrapper on the lawn was a rite of passage for me as a young man. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the story, which is all about this guy thought, oh, if I just put a sticker on, it'll be like terms of service. Guess what?
You're on the air.
When you're violating other people's terms of service, that's not going to work for you. And basically what Twitch is saying is like a sticker saying they're under surveillance doesn't mean you get to stream them on Twitch.
Yeah. So there, that is actually not crazy when it comes to a lot of, if you are shooting something for television,
sure,
at like a concert venue or something, it is very common to just have a bunch of signage outside that says you will be on camera. If you do not want to be on camera, then leave. You are consenting if you walk in. I would wonder whether or not if you did something that was a little bit more robust, whether or not he would be able to get away with it. But this was obviously.
Yeah, I think if he'd been specific saying, I will be live streaming you, and even went farther to say on Twitch,
yeah,
then maybe it would be fine. There are other people who actually do this from their Ubers and Lyfts with express consent. They tell people like, hey, I'm live streaming in here, just so you know. But folks were.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Like, but they're not as funny because they know they're being streamed, so they behave themselves better.
Yeah, this is a bad look. In fact, I think I might have seen him do it on the IRL.
Oh, no kidding.
Channel. Yeah, and it was something that I thought was weird then. It's a strange world, man. It is an evolving world, but I would say
also sounds like kind of a boring stream. Most of the time, people are just sitting there nicely in the back, you know?
Sure.
Okay, here we are.
I will say I've certainly had some conversations with my wife in the back of an Uber that were probably that would have been spicy enough to, have some bits thrown in an IRL.
I can think of an entertaining Lyft ride I took recently from Santa Monica to my house that would have been made for excellent live streaming.
Yeah. Oh, no, there was one. There was certainly one where it was very interesting. But yeah, look, this is an evolution of not only live streaming in general, but also Twitch's IRL culture, which has already run into a few roadblocks in terms of streaming at parties and stuff like that.
Qualcomm announced the QTM 052 millimeter wave antenna module. Millimeter wave portion of the 5G spectrum is the part that offers the fastest speeds, but it has the most technical hurdles. It has a shorter range and requires beamforming to deal with interference from solid objects. You'll often heard it said 5G can't go through walls. Well, it can't go through a steel wall, but it can reflect and bounce around, and beamforming and beam tracking allow it to still work inside buildings, especially with a little assistance. The QTM 052 helps beamforming and beam tracking work by combining four antennas in a module the size of a penny for multi-directional reception. And Qualcomm says its X50 5G modem can support four modules. So that would give you 16 antennas, which you could place in four different parts of the phone. And that way, if your hand is blocking one of the antennas, you've still got other antennas that have plenty of directions to get those bouncing signals that are being tracked and formed, etc. Qualcomm says the first hardware with the new antennas will arrive at the beginning of 2019. This is all good news, if that's what you're waiting to hear. Like this, you're not going to have a whole lot of 5G service, but you're going to have these antennas, which are going to make the higher speed 5G work. A higher speed 5G practically can get you 1.4 megabits per second. Its theoretical max is around 5 gigabits per second.
Wow. Look, this is a good step forward. And also, we are entering into a world now where 5G connectivity could be very, very useful for devices that are internet connected that just kind of stand stationary. And maybe you just, it's something that can get a faster, more reliable connection with a chip like this.
Yeah, no, there's a couple of different ways this could be used, for sure. This is meant for mobile, though.
Yeah. Nintendo has filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona against the operator of two websites that make ROMs of old Nintendo console games available for download. LoveRetro.com has been taken offline, and LoveROMs.com has removed all Nintendo files from its directory. Nintendo's suit claims damages in the millions of dollars and asks for an injunction to give it control of the domain.
It's a contentious... contentious sort of situation that goes on online with regard to ROMs. And apologies for the echo. I'm not sure where that's coming from. But essentially, ROM trading was this sort of like, well, if nobody really notices we're doing it, we can get away with it. And now Nintendo is one of those companies who is more willing to crack down on this and is coming in hard on these particular sites, saying in their filings, like, this isn't just a couple of people trading ROMs online. These aren't two people who say, well, I have the cartridges. I just, you know, I want to be able to use them in my emulator. This is a website that's sort of making their name. They don't necessarily, as far as anything I read, they don't accuse them of making money, but making their name and getting a lot of audience to come to them and maybe driving some advertising revenue that way on the backs of trading these ROMs, which Nintendo says we are the only ones who have the right to do that. We own this intellectual property.
They committed the cardinal sin of any ROM site, and that is to fly above the radar.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That is number one. It's like Fight Club. You don't talk about it. Ever.
You got too popular there.
You know, all the ROM sites make money off a bunch of click ads and a bunch of, you know, pop-up ads and stuff. But you don't like signal to the world what exactly you're doing. I mean, to be honest, more than half a dozen ROM sites I can go to right now that have everything, either as single files or just a large repository that you can download over a BitTorrent client. And they've been there for the better part of 10 years. And they survive because they don't fly above the radar.
Okay. But also, let's understand that there is a sea change here when it comes to these companies, Nintendo and any kind of hardware company, has had, for as long as I've been alive, an aversion to backwards compatibility. So it's not like every new system has a way that you can play all your old games on it easily. They've never really been able to do that, or they never wanted to do that. They never were really interested because their money was made in selling the new console. There is now, both with the love of retro gaming and the fact that Nintendo has really gotten into this on a larger level with their Super Nintendo and Nintendo ROM devices, this has now become a business that they are more interested in, and so they're going to protect their interests more.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, they've created virtual consoles and emulators that you could play, like, and they would sell the games as a pack, right? You would buy a disc with, you know, the 25 best.
I think what Justin's talking about is the mini console that has all the retro games, and the Nintendo Switch store adding more and more classic games to its library.
They finally want to take advantage of what is obviously, as you've mentioned, Roger, been a fan demand for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, that's a way that they can get away with claiming millions of dollars in damages. Whether or not that's true, it's And I was like, well, you're taking away from our business because we're trying to provide that retro service too. Because
we're under manufacturing all these old fashioned game consoles in miniature form that people can't buy because we don't have enough of them. And so obviously it's taking away millions of dollars from us. The BBC reports that developer Abhishek Singh used TensorFlow to train a machine learning algorithm to recognize American Sign Language and turn it into speech that can then be used to activate an Amazon Echo. The Echo's responses are then listened to and translated into text. Singh believes Amazon could incorporate the algorithm into the Amazon Echo Show, which of course has a camera, to allow sign language control of smart speakers. Now, Jeffrey Bigham, an expert in human-computer interaction from Carnegie Mellon University, told the BBC that Singh's project is an excellent proof of concept, but computer vision and language understanding is not yet capable of fully recognizing sign language. So he wasn't poo-pooing what Singh did, but he's like, it's not going to be a perfect replacement. At the same time, Amazon today introduced Tap to Alexa for the Echo Show, which adds shortcuts to the home screen as a replacement for voice interaction. This is part of their accessibility push for the Echo Show, and they rolled out captioning to more markets. That's something they'd rolled out in the U.S., but it's now available in the U.K. and a few other markets as well.
Were you able to try out Tap to Alexa? Is it rolling out slowly? Or
I didn't try it out. Now that you say that, I feel like an idiot. Like, I absolutely should have gone and turned it on, shouldn't I? Well, maybe that's hasn't pushed out to me yet, but I will try it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about sign language, but I know that this is a really cool research project, right? Even though there's more to it, but
Singh thing is, I mean, I would love if he would work with Amazon. I don't know what his angle is here, but I would love if he would work with Amazon to incorporate this so that you could look at the Echo Show, have a setting flipped on, do sign language, and have it display text back. And the Tap program that Amazon launched seems like it would work right into that, as this could be an extra option you could add to it. And Amazon obviously pursuing accessibility for these devices.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, think about voice to text. You know, sometimes voice is just easier. So sign language, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I like it. I hope we see more of it.
I like it too. You know what else I like? Earnings.
Of course. Woo!
You know, good, bad, ugly. Alphabet reported Q2 earnings per share of $11.75 versus, an expected $9.59 and revenue of $32.7 billion, which beat expectations of $32.17 billion. Google's advertising business accounted for most of its revenue, hitting $28 billion. Other revenues, which includes cloud business and hardware sales, $4.4 billion. Other bets, like healthcare company Verily, Fiber, and Waymo, posted Q2 revenue of $145 million on operating losses of $732 million.
So 4.7 divided by 32.7 is 14%. 14% of Alphabet's revenue comes from not Google advertising. Like, we're not even talking about Google Cloud. It comes from AdSense. It comes from ads. If there is a criticism of Alphabet, it's that it's still overly dependent on advertising for its revenue. But this is generally good news for Alphabet.
Yeah, well, it's because it is advertising. It has eaten everything. Go ahead and for all of our New York listeners, the New York Daily News laid off 50% of its staff today. Part of the reason why is because ad sales are down everywhere because Facebook and Google have eaten all of it. They drank your milkshake.
Yeah, they are full of $28 billion worth of milkshake right now. I wish they would break out a few more. I'm looking forward to the day that they break out, let's say, a Waymo as a separate line item. I know it's too early to do that, but maybe Verily is pretty close to that, because I'd like to see how some of these other Alphabet businesses do. Because you're absolutely right, Justin. They are not hurting in the advertising business, but looking down the road, looking longer term, you know, the decade long thing, somebody's going to come out and start drinking their milkshake if they're not careful, and they need to have some diversity to survive that.
Certainly so. And I would say us as tech journalists need to continue to put pressure to see exactly what these companies are doing if they are going to be covered with the kind of breathless anticipation that many of them are.
I would like to think that maybe what's happening is we should move towards us as tech journalists covering things in a way that helps people understand for themselves what's going on instead of trying to sway them one way or another. But that's our main topic. If you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, decide for yourself what you think about tech news, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right, we got a good one here. James Ball has an article in the Columbia Journalism Review, a respected publication. I have had my picture in it, so I like it. It called "We Need a New Model for Tech Journalism." He alleges that the press has treated tech too lightly for too long, treating founders as heroes and tech stories as light kicker-style stories, avoiding the legal fights and the dark side of founders getting kicked out. He says, and I quote from his article, "The bootstrap narrative remains, with CEOs still treated as celebrities and the media acting more as a cheerleader than a watchdog. For most of the past decade, these companies were untroubled by media incidents." And he uses that to paint a picture where tech companies can't be held to account easily because they have this 25-year head start of not being treated with scrutiny, and now they're the biggest companies in the world. He uses examples like Hyperloop coverage being all over the place when traditional rails can't get funds, breathless Bitcoin and blockchain accounts leading readers to get caught in get-rich-quick schemes, journalists being more excited about 3D and VR than consumers, and with 3D in particular, proving not to be successful with consumers. He says, "Ending technology journalism as we know it won't save tech, let alone the world, but it might be a good first step." Now, I have my own criticisms about this article, but let's start with you, Justin, because I know you're chopping at the bit. What did you think of this?
I think it's stupid.
Okay.
I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, there's nothing that I love more than a pedantic conversation about journalism. I always love it when we as tech journalists, or journalists in general, can get to the real story, us. Here's my 2 points here. On to bolster his argument, I do think that one thing that I've noticed, tech journalism effectively to me is the combination of two very, very different traditional styles of journalism. A very dry engineering kind of journalism, which is founded by about, you know, science and engineering and where the breakthroughs are going to come through.
You're a nan-tech, you're extreme tech, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Exactly. And then business journalism, and specifically this very weird form of business that has been incubated largely in the Silicon Valley area, but also all over the world at this point. And when you are overloaded on one side, in a way that I do think that we are overloaded on one side, in terms of the vast majority of our narratives when it comes to tech journalism is on the business side. It's who's getting hired, who's getting fired, who's getting merged, that kind of stuff. It's less on tech literacy in a way that I think would give, to Ball's point, maybe a little bit more of a sobering, okay, well, what exactly is this doing and how does this affect us kind of stories, instead of just, wow, isn't it exciting? 50,000 users. Hooray. However, the one thing that you can't get away from is that this has been a rapidly growing niche, and the industry itself has pushed back on stuff that is deemed too salacious. It's a small crowd, and it policed itself very, very well. There's a lot of evolving stuff here that I think does need to continually be shaped, but to say that it's poisoned and the entire thing needs to be ripped down, I think is just silly. And to be honest, even his examples about Hyperloop and Bitcoin and stuff like that, I think is one of my least favorite journalism arguments, which is that journalists need to be guardians for the readership instead of journalists need to be informing the readership, that they should be knocking down bad ideas that they know. That to me is a gatekeeper argument, and I've always hated that.
So there were a couple things about this article that I took issue with, and I also he made comments.
Sorry about that.
You guys hear that? As far as his point about celebrity treating company founders and CEOs as celebrities, I don't think there's a bigger celebrity than, I don't know, the founder of Facebook. I mean, as far as like cultural impact, that's a bigger celebrity to me than my favorite actor, for example. But so, you know, that's sort of a strange argument. I actually think, you know, if you're really defining celebrity, then that's probably a pretty credible celebrity. Yeah. And you know, people are going to do that.
I would also say that the celebrity machine for Zuckerberg might have been, you know, making a movie out of his life. like
years ago.
Be the bigger proponent there.
Yeah, and there he made another point in the article, kind of like a fandom thing, like, you know, Engadget is live blogging or people are waiting outside the Apple store. It's like, I don't think disdain for fandom is a bad thing. I think you know, you let people like what they like. People get, you know, fired up about all sorts of stuff. Tech is no exception. In fact, arguably, tech has more of value to our lives than a lot of the things that other people get fired up about. So, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I do think that page views and quotas are a thing. Having worked at many publications in the past, I mean, that's definitely true. But his point that sort of rush to be first and to publish all the articles means that journalists are spread too thin, that really depends on where you work. I mean, yeah. I've worked at places where people had a certain beat and that's what they did because that's what they were good at. So this kind of churn and burn thing isn't always the case.
My overall impression of this article is not that he's wrong. He makes some really good points, but that he's talking about a different tech press than I've experienced in the past 10 years. And I wonder if he is heavily weighted towards this is what the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, or maybe the Times of London, The Guardian, because he is a UK-based reporter, have been doing. And if that's the case, then yeah, I can kind of see what he's saying. But he doesn't distinguish between that broad press and the tech press. The tech press, in my opinion, have been overly critical sometimes of the wrong things, going after people for small things that are like, hold on, that was just a change in a form. Why are you vilifying? And that's been going on for 10 years as well. So I get the feeling that somebody who has followed tech journalism very closely, whether as a reader or a participant, is going to have a way different impression than the one Ball describes. He also suggests some solutions that are already in place. He suggests entry-level reporters write up launch events and conferences and assign beat reporters to companies. There are several organizations that already do that. That was happening at CNET when I was there. From inside DTNS, I see the press pouncing on critical stories about big tech companies, often without bringing in the broader understanding, as a bigger problem than forgiving them these days. I see a culture that is quick to accuse, and Ball seems to kind of want to throw gas on that fire. However, I will say he hits on some big problems like access journalism. Because of the rooted history in product reviews where you have to sign an NDA, there's a huge culture of secrecy where you can't even visit a headquarters without signing an NDA, which is one of the reasons that I don't do product reviews and I don't visit headquarters, because I want to be able to talk about the things that I'm talking about. And we need a more critical top-down broad perspective to help people understand technology. He writes, people who can sit back and aside from the tech industry maelstrom and try to see the picture from above. That's kind of what we're attempting to do here. There are other people who attempt to do it in other places, both print and podcast and otherwise. And yes, I think we could use more of that.
110%. My favorite thing, and this is, we're really going to get inside the kitchen here. Whenever Tom and I have talked about stories, because I've always been fascinated and appreciated your news value as to what is good and what is bad. Your guiding light, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, has been this is about the consumer that is outside of the Bay Area bubble. Not to say that there's not plenty of people here in the Bay Area that also love this show. I know there are, but that this is not about the Game of Thrones of what VC is leveraging this person and they're kicking out and somebody's sleeping with somebody else. That those stories are often, they're business stories. They're important business, you know, side things, but really it's about the tech and it's about getting tech literacy right. And if you focus on that, I think a lot of these issues are very, very clarifying. And as a kicker, I think you're right. He's focusing on the big platforms while there is, you know, down here, a fine underclass of journalism that is serving its audience very well.
I would say Ars Technica, The Verge, TechCrunch, they all have great examples of people doing exactly that. And I'm leaving off way too many because we'd be here all night. But there are a lot of tech blogs and publications on the web that do this well. And he's kind of missing those people there. I think Sarah and I should deserve a little perk for bringing in echoes into a discussion about an echo chamber.
I know. You thought that was an accident.
Mm-mm.
We really overthink these shows.
That was very meta.
Yeah, exactly. Glad you pointed that out. It's always good when you point out your cleverness to the audience.
Yes, it always helps.
You know who else is clever? Everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories as well and also vote on other stories at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Helps us understand what you want us to talk about. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow is another place you can hang out.
Or you can just send us the electronic mails. What do we have today, Sarah?
Oh, glad you asked, Tom. Chris wrote in to thank Tom personally for his Jack Conte interview from last week. Chris said, I only really knew that he started Patreon, that his company had that announcement about some changes back in December, walked it back after a week. Wouldn't be the first company to do that. Chris says, at the time of the announcement, you made statements to the effect that you knew the people at Patreon and they were good people. Still, it was hard for Chris to internalize that with the actions that he was observing as an outsider. Chris says, I want to say thank you for putting a voice with the name. It's easy to see oneself as the victim when something goes wrong, and it's easy to see a faceless company as a profiteer when it hits you in the wallet. So it was nice to hear Jack as a real person who's trying to make the world a better place, which is actually a kind of nice dovetail from our conversation from the second.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you, Chris. That was very nice.
Very nice. Also, thanks to Justin Robert Young for being with us this fine Monday. Justin, what's been going on with you?
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you what. Folks, you can head on over to freepoliticalnewsletter.com. We have migrated it to MailChimp. It is a good thing. It actually gives me a lot more options. I can embed videos and stuff now in a way that I hadn't before. So get ready. We debuted today on the Free Political Newsletter. I'm going to have, because in our great Discord, we have just a running tally of crazy political ads that come in around this time of year. So it is a fresh harvest season for lunacy in politics, and you will get all of it if you sign up for the Free Political Newsletter at freepoliticalnewsletter.com.
Of course, you can support this show in loads of ways. There's perks if you support it directly and become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Either one, you can get some stuff from our store, dailytechnewsshow.com/store. Big thanks to Prigshaw over there on Twitter, who sent us a picture on Twitter of him sporting his DTNS hat at the Casey Key Fish House this weekend and looking good at the same time. Thank you, Prigshaw. And if you would like to join him with a little DTNS on your head, dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
It's a great hat, guys. I wear mine often. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday. If you'd like to join us, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC, put it on your calendar, say, every weekday. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We'll be back with Patrick Beja on the morrow. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.